Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Howard. Yeah, pretty good. Even though those words might not necessarily be true, I don't know. There's something about that song. I think it's maybe an age thing. But when I heard it, it kind of took me back places. I liked it.
It does. So that's what we've been doing. It's Throwback Thursday, and we've made it a bit cheesy. And as much as we laugh, we absolutely love these songs. I don't know what's wrong with us.
I think we all have...
It's like a proper guilty pleasure. Exactly. All right. So tell us about Israel's COVID or corona situation. It's definitely deteriorating, isn't it?
It is deteriorating. And unfortunately, yesterday saw more than 800 new cases of COVID-19 diagnosed, the highest number since the beginning of the whole pandemic. So whereas in the first wave, we thought we, you know, had reached a certain peak and that things would get better from there. We've now exceeded that peak. Lots and lots and lots of discussion, a lot of anecdotal stories about COVID and what's happening in Israel. Some people think Israel is on the precipice of a disaster. Some people think that they have already fallen into the disaster where things have become out of control. Haifa was a city which ironically had so few diagnoses of COVID over the last while, certainly in the first wave, hardly any infections. Now all of a sudden quite a number of infections in Haifa as well. A number of places have been put into lockdown. Suburbs of Lod, suburbs of Ashdod have been put into lockdown because of a huge increase in the number of diagnoses cases over there. excuse me, we still have a sort of similar situation where the number of serious cases remains controllable. About 50 odd people considered to be seriously ill, hospitalized, and only about 20 to 30 people being intubated at the moment on respirators. So that remains very much controllable. But there's so many fascinating stories and little pieces around the edge. Is it true that we are seeing so many new diagnoses because we are having so many more tests than before? This is one of the theories that is going around. I'm not sure that that's true, although, you know, there could be some element of truth to it when you look at the fact that the number of serious cases is not increasing dramatically. So maybe that is the case. Then there's been a lot of criticism of the fact that those people who are being tested is only a certain population. In other words, people who are already showing symptoms, people who feel, who the authorities feel have justification to be tested. Whereas, there is a huge school of thought that says people should be randomly tested because there are so many asymptomatic people walking around the streets and got no idea that they are carrying the virus or have the virus and they are infecting other people as they go around. And so there should be some sort of random testing system whereby even people who seemingly don't have reason to be tested should be tested because some of those might well be people who are carrying and spreading the virus. A lot of strange anecdotal stories about how people are being infected and how many people have gone into self-isolation, self-quarantine as a result of having become having come into contact with people who are infected. For example, an entertainer was hired by the city of Herzliya to go around to kindergartens as a sort of end of year party for the kindergarten children. Well, he succeeded in putting the children and parents of 13 kindergartens into self-quarantine when it was discovered that he had corona. He had COVID-19. Oh, wow. So a lot of the kindergarten children and their parents not very happy in the city of Herzliya. Another story about a celebrity who happened to be in the mall somewhere and someone recognized her and asked to have a selfie. And lo and behold, this person who asked for the selfie happened to be COVID-19 positive. And so the celebrity now has also had to go into self-quarantine. Lots and lots of anecdotal stories. People going to parties, one person present at the party with a virus, everybody into self-quarantine. So, you know, so many different stories, not only about the people who have been infected, but indeed the people who are in self-quarantine, which runs into tens of thousands of people, literally in self-quarantine. And, you know, the Ministry of Education is now looking at ways to start the new school year in September with COVID-19 restrictions in place, distance learning, alternating the days on which children attend school. So this is now becoming a much longer term issue that people are planning for and dealing with. Office space becoming available as companies downsize their office requirements, either because people are remaining at home or because people unfortunately have to be fired. So lots and lots of implications consequential actions being taken as a result of COVID-19. This is clearly something that people are now beginning to understand that we're going to have to live with.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really quite frightening. El Al has cancelled all of its flights until further notice.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, El Al has been very severely hit by COVID-19 and by the lockdown. But out of all of its pilots, El Al had retained the services of 100 pilots who had continued to work for El Al while the remainder were on unpaid leave. And these pilots were mostly flying cargo flights because there obviously has been a massive demand for cargo while, of course, passenger flights have been completely grounded. But it was announced yesterday that the LL CEO has ordered all of the company's aircraft to return to Israel, including both passenger and cargo flights. And this is because the pilots union decided that they are declaring a dispute with the company over the fact that they feel that the company is financially unstable, and the pilots therefore feel that they don't know that the company is going to be able to satisfy all of its commitments that it has made to the pilots union. And so the pilots are effectively grounding the company. El Al lost $140 million in the first quarter of 2020, which is obviously not a pretty picture and has really brought into question whether the company can actually survive at all. There was some rumor about a private Israeli wealthy individual who was negotiating to buy the company out completely, which of course I guess he could probably buy out for very, very little money these days because its share price has dropped so dramatically. But the pilots have always been a thorn in the side of the management of a company. They've always had huge demands and always been treated in a way that some people consider to be more than what they really need to be treated, at the expense of other employees of the company. And once again, we're seeing the pilot union flexing its muscles here and literally grounding all El Al flights. So as of now, apparently all company planes are returning to Israel, and that there will be no further flights until further notice. And that's a very, very serious issue, not only for repatriation flights, which El Al has been called upon to do on behalf of the Israeli government, but also because of the cargo issue. I mean, we need things delivered to Israel. There are many shortages of many items, medications, foods, things like that, all as a result of COVID-19. And the fact that El Al will not be carrying cargo, at least for the foreseeable future, is a very serious issue indeed.
Yeah, very much so. On a lighter note, 3D steak printers will be placed in restaurants starting from next year. How is the steak printing going to work?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about this whole 3D printing for meat substitutes, Howard, over the past while, and the subject continues to fascinate me. So I apologize in advance to those people who feel that they've heard enough of this, but I think it's very fascinating because obviously there is this market now for meat alternatives, and an Israeli startup company is called Redefine Meat. They've produced this 3D printer, and what you do is they actually have plant-based formulations that they put into the 3D printer, and it literally prints a steak for you. It's high protein. It's no cholesterol. It looks and cooks and tastes exactly like a steak. It has 95% apparently smaller environmental impact than actual beef. And now they're beginning to sell their printers to restaurants. So you can order your steak at a restaurant. The kitchen will print your steak to your liking. You can print a steak to be softer or harder. You can print a steak to be juicier with less fat or with more fat. You can print it according to your requirements, and then cook the steak, and you simply are served the steak, and it's all printed right there on the spot. So I don't really know how to react to this. I don't know that I would like to be eating a steak that's been printed out. You know, it just kind of, I don't know, it sounds a little bit strange to my I don't know what people think about that. How do you fancy having your steak printed for you?
I think it's awesome. Zanati says absolutely no chance.
No, 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 no. No chance at all.
I don't know if they're going to be starting to print Wurrivores soon. I mean, maybe that's an old option as well, you know. I haven't heard about that yet. I mean, all the focus seems to have been on burger patties and steaks.
That's awesome. I think it's great. You know, it's like you don't even think about what you're eating then. You don't need to worry about it. As long as it tastes good. For me, it's all about the taste. Like, why would I care if it's printed or if it comes from an animal? In a negative way, I'm saying.
Of course, resolves a lot of kashrut issues as well, because, you know, you can have your steak and you can then have your, you know,
you can have your steak and eat it afterwards. Too. Mm.
Exactly. You can have steak and your cheese sauce with it, you know, who's ever, you know, been thinking about that. But, it's an interesting thing. And, I don't know. We're just following it to see. I mean, I'm definitely intrigued to try it out. They're going to be starting it in some of the higher end restaurants in Israel as a trial over the next 6 months. And then apparently it's going to be rolled out, on a broader scale to restaurants, those who hopefully survive, the next 6 month period, but it's going to be rolled out on a broader scale and people are going to have the steaks printed for them. So, you know, lots of environmental considerations, kashrut issues, people who like to be vegetarian or vegan. It's all good. You know, everybody seems to have been, catered for, by this particular issue.
I think it's awesome. Finally,
so yeah, it's an interesting one.
Anthony, does Israel have an obligation to invest in Jewish education in the diaspora? Interesting question.
Well, I mean, this is a question that was really posed by the outgoing head of the OU in the USA, the Orthodox Union. Alan Fagan is his name, and he said that the state of Israel really needs to join the fight to bolster Jewish identity in the diaspora. And in order to do that, he thinks that that Israel has an obligation to become more involved in education, educating people in the diaspora. And I mean, he clearly was referring to Jewish education, but there is a broader question, which is what about, you know, education in general about Judaism, about Israel, you know, just hasbara, some people like to call it public relations. But, you know, do we think that Israel's obligation stretches to bolstering Jewish education in the diaspora? I mean, I know that Israeli organizations are very much involved in helping and supporting diaspora Jewish organizations. That has already been the case for some time, not only financially, but more importantly in terms of providing shlichim, people, leaders who are able to give some new ideas and some guidance, and also providing material that's been developed in Israel in an attempt to try to help Jewish organizations in the diaspora. What do you think, Howard? Do you think that Israel has this obligation to become a lot more involved in Jewish education in the diaspora?
So I think the word obligation is where I think it's important to Israel, and I think that Israel will gain from investing in education in the diaspora. But whether it's an obligation or not, I'm not sure. I don't see why it is an obligation. But I think it's most definitely within Israel's best interest to encourage and support education, because there's so much misinformation that is part and parcel of growing up in the diaspora and living in that diaspora, that the more education that Israel can provide, the better.
I think that's true. I think the irony of the whole situation is that what we're finding, especially in the US, is that a lot of Jewish youth are being raised to be kind of a little bit apathetic towards Israel. And so the question is whether Israel getting more involved in that education process might change that around, because we're seeing more and more of the Jewish youth growing up, particularly those from outside of Orthodox Jewish circles, and they actually either have just a kind of apathetic view towards Israel, or even potentially a negative view towards Israel. And I think that that's where we're missing the trick a little bit, because we do want to have some sort of dual support system backwards and forwards between the Jewish world and Israel. And certainly in America, I feel that Israel is losing it a little.
Certainly. I think that is absolutely the case. And if you look at the statistics, certainly they underscore or they emphasize exactly what you're saying.